This podcast is for entertainment purposes only and does not replace your own financial, tax, legal, or financial product advice.
Hello and welcome to another episode of My Millennial Property. My name is Emily Wallace and I am joined, as always, by John Pidgeon. Welcome, John.
Thank you, Emily, and welcome to you. It's great to be here.
Before we get into our special guest, who is a very, very special guest, we need to give our thanks to Sean Wellman. Sean Wellman is a great man. He's a very great man. He resides in Victoria alongside myself, but the fact that he resides in Victoria doesn't mean that you have to be in Victoria to experience the Sean Wellman experience. If you are looking for financed to help you get further in your property journey. If you already have a property and you need to refinance, Sean supports this show and it's the reason that we can be here recording today. If you would like to speak to a mortgage broker, strongly suggest you look in the show notes for a link directly to Wellman Financed. Go and check him out.
Absolutely. And you know he's an Adelaidean.
Oh, is he?
Yes.
I actually didn't know that.
Yes, he was born in Adelaide. If for the listeners, if you Google the great man, you'll find that he was born in Adelaide. Now he lives in Melbourne. Was an AFL footballer, a superstar, played in the 2000 Essendon Premiership. So he's not just a mortgage broker, Emily.
He's a man of many talents.
He is.
I'm learning more and more.
Yes, that's right.
Very good. Well, I did mention we have a special guest today and we are going to jump straight into that. We have a special guest who is actually a listener of the show and he reached out to us. And I think this is a really cool, I guess, episode in that it's a listener sharing their story of property investment. His name is Matt Chamberlain and he joins us in the virtual studio. Welcome, Matt.
Thanks, Emily. Thanks, John. Great to be here.
Yeah, pleasure to have you on. And just a quick pre-frame, if you're thinking about jumping on the show, listeners, we can't fit everyone in, but we'll do our best.
Good call, John, because no, we can't fit everybody in. As much as we would love to, we'd love to feature every listener,
absolutely.
But unfortunately we can't. But we're very lucky to be joined by Matt today and he has a pretty cool story to share. So, Matt, you are on a property investment journey. And as many of our listeners would be, you know, perhaps they're looking to buy their own home, perhaps they're looking to buy an investment property. What I'm keen to understand from your point of view, being a listener and being in that mindset, when did you first come to understand property and what it could do for you as a vehicle, as an asset?
Probably started for me where I guess it starts for a lot of young people. And that was in reading a book called Rich Dad, Poor Dad, which I can see you're nodding your head now. It really was the basis for, I guess, me understanding what property investment is and how it can help you build, you know, a really solid asset base for yourself in the future. And it spoke to me at a really good time in my life. I was quite young still. I think I read it in the years between, say, 19 and 21. And it spoke to me on a really basic level, which, you know, I could take in every word, really understood it. And I actually read that book a fair few times after the first one because I didn't believe it was true, to be honest.
Yeah, most definitely. There's quite a few different concepts unpacked in that book. I've listened to the audiobook of it a number of times myself as well. Now, you say you're quite young when you listen to it, but you're still quite young now, really. I mean, you're 25 at the moment?
I am, yes.
I love what we said back in the day,
yeah,
when I was young. And
all those years ago, yeah.
Younger than us. That's awesome. So you read the book and you obviously gained some concepts and some basic rules from that book around wealth and wealth creation and property. Then what were your next steps? What was your thought process around getting into property?
Yeah, well, even before that, the thing that got me to read Rich Dad, Poor Dad was actually The Barefoot Investor. And that really started my whole kind of, I guess, investment journey and my thoughts about, you know, putting in savings accounts and setting aside emergency money and all that kind of stuff. So I had understood a little bit about how to save and how to structure myself to essentially automate all of my savings. And then I was kind of looking for, well, I know I've got this money and I know I'm putting it aside. Up until that point, I'd only really been exposed to the share market. And I made a few what I thought were blue chip investments in the share market in 2014 when I just turned 18. I opened my own brokerage account and those shares, I picked three and they all seemed to go south pretty quickly after I bought them. So I was, you know, I had all these savings and I knew that, well, the first time I jumped into the share market, it didn't work out so well. So I started looking for different options. I fell into Rich Dad Poor Dad because I was recommended it. And then really, I guess the journey really took off from there because I learned about this concept called leverage and how, you know, you can use, it is taking on a little bit of risk, but you can use other people's money that Rich Dad talks about to essentially control a larger asset in real estate. So, you know, the blinkers came off at that point. It was like a light bulb went off in my head. And I knew that from that point forth, that property was going to be one of the foundations of, you know, my journey for the foreseeable future. But it was just, okay, well, how do I save up enough money now to have a deposit to get into a property?
Yeah, cool. Yeah. So, Matt, we talk about not wanting to be the smartest person in the library. We want to get out there and take some action. So how long did it take you from, say, reading the book to starting to save money to having your various accounts set up to then actually transacting in property?
It was a long time. It was so I set up my accounts. I remember walking into the bank when I was 18 and asking the teller to open six online savings accounts, and she nearly fell off her chair because she'd never experienced that before. But through that whole process, I'd saved a fair bit. Then I went overseas, saved a fair bit more, went overseas. So that the savings for the property probably started around, let's say, 20 or 19. I had a little bit of a basis there, maybe let's say $8,000-$10,000 at that point. And then what I wanted to do was start saving consistently to a point where I was studying at the time. And I wanted to, by the end of my studying full time and working casually, I wanted to save up at least $25,000, which it worked out for me. I managed to put a good system in place and made sure that I paid myself first every week, which got me to that goal. And then jumping into full-time work straight out of uni at 23, I then stayed at home, saved as much as I could, and purchased my first investment in, it was June. We exchanged contracts in June of 2019. So that was, I was 24 at the time. So it was probably about four and a half years.
Okay. So, but some of those years you were studying at uni, so you weren't earning an actual full-time income. Is that correct?
That's right. Yeah. I did the maths being an accountant. I loved my spreadsheets or studying to become an accountant. And I worked out that roughly across the year, because I was working casually, it was up and down every week. You know, I was putting away, or I was earning, let's say, just under $30,000 working casually. And I made myself a goal that I would save at least 50% of that for traveling, for the house deposit, which was where most of it went, and for other things. You know, you take tax out of that, and I didn't really have much left in the meantime. So yeah, working casually and worked really, really hard. And the whole goal was just to get that deposit in a healthy situation so I could get stuck in.
Yeah. Most definitely. With that sort of, I mean, I guess looking at someone who's studying and, you know, around 30K a year of income and still wanting to travel overseas whilst also saving for a house, it's a lot to balance. Did you find yourself missing out on certain things because you were very focused on the savings? I'm sure there's probably listeners who sacrifice some things in order to achieve a long-term goal. Did you experience that over that time?
Yes, absolutely. That was something that I kept kind of coming back to, I guess. It was always a decision in my mind as to what I prioritized and what I wanted. And for me personally, it was more, I was happy to scrimp and save on some of the littler things, knowing that I was kind of putting my money towards something bigger and better for the future. You're absolutely right. There was a lot of sacrifice. Thankfully, at the time, I was able to live at home and I was just paying $80 a week in board. So there wasn't a great deal of, I guess, living costs. But because of that, I made myself a goal to say, well, if I'm not paying rent, I'm going to put all of that and some into a bucket and save it all up.
Yeah, I think that's awesome. And it never gets boring for me hearing this sort of stuff. Like, you just... you read Rich Dad Poor Dad. Yeah, that was one of the catalysts. You barefoot investor for setting up bank accounts and managing money. But the goal was set in place to say, I want to go and buy a property. I'm going to do whatever it takes. I know there's going to be sacrifices. I might not be able to go out on a Saturday night with the boys, but I know that in 2, 3, 4 years' time, I'll have reached that goal of buying that property. So well done to you. It's fantastic to have that strategy and that discipline to see that through. I just want to ask, how did you know? Because I get a lot of questions from 20-something-year-olds saying, how do I know when I've got enough money to buy a property? When you first started out saving, did you know how much you needed and what was going to be your purchase price?
No, and that was probably the big question mark that that kept hovering over my head. I really didn't know when enough was going to be enough. So I set myself a goal of working towards $50,000. That was the deposit that, you know, sprung into my head. And that, because I wasn't at the times of, well, leading up to that, until I got relatively close to that, that continued to be the goal that I'd set myself. As I got closer, I spoke to a mortgage broker and we started to really hash out what it would take based on my borrowing capacity to actually get into a property. And eventually the property that I did settle on, it was around that $50,000 mark, including all of my closing costs. So to answer your question, the way I approached it was to set myself a figurative goal and just keep hammering away at it.
And that speaks to so many people, doesn't it? It's like, well, don't think about the small stuff. Just get the system in place and just start saving money. The rest will take care of itself once you get to the stage where you know your borrowing capacity, you've got a good chunk of savings, you talk to enough people, you do enough research, and then you execute.
100%. I think those foundation things are really key. We're going to take a quick break, and when we come back, we're going to deep dive a bit further into how you actually went about buying the property, maybe some tips you want to share with other listeners who are thinking about the same, and then what your plans are for the future.
If you're after personal financial advice, don't get it from a podcast. If you would like help based on your own personal situation, head over to sortyourmoneyout.com. Click Get Help and we'd be happy to introduce you to one of our trusted advisors. We also have a panel of trusted mortgage brokers we can connect you with to get you into your first home, an investment property purchase, or to review your current loan if you don't have a broker. Our panel of advisors, mortgage brokers, and accountants work with clients all over Australia so they can connect with you wherever you are. That's sortyourmoneyout.com and click Get Help.
So coming back from our break, just actually one thing I wanted to remind our listeners about, who obviously we've heard in the first part of this podcast about Matt's journey and how he had to potentially miss out on a couple of things to be able to save and sacrifice, and he was living at home and paying board. I think there's a big thing around saving and the sacrifices you have to make and the judgment of other people. And I know millennials are really good at focusing on their own goals. But I just wanted to say, if you're listening out there and you're worried about what other people think about your decisions that you're making for your savings and the way that you want to plan out your financial future, stop worrying about other people and just focus on your own part. I'm sure, Matt, there might have been times when you were saving that you might have perhaps, you know, had comments or judgments from other people around how you were going about things. I think it's really important to acknowledge that everyone's on their own journey and everyone's on their own savings goals. And if you have to give up things, you have to say no to a night out because it's going to better your future, please don't be worried about that. Just some life advice from a 20-something-year-old for our listeners.
I love your life advice, Emily. That's fantastic. I copped it for 15 years for renting.
Nothing, absolutely nothing wrong with renting. No. I'm a renter. I'm a rentvestor. Absolutely nothing wrong with it. So,
yeah.
Listeners, I hope that's helpful life advice. Now, yeah. Enough on the life advice. Matt, so we got to the point where you had seen a mortgage broker, found out your serviceability, and you were now ready to purchase a property. How did you actually go about understanding where to put this money, where to place this investment? What sort of process did you go through?
That's a really good question, and it kind of stumped me for quite a while. So throughout the time I was living at home studying at uni, I actually commuted to uni maybe 40, 45 minutes each way each day. Mm-hmm. So I had all of this time where I was driving and I was listening to talkback radio, and I was nearly falling asleep because it was just so dry for me. So I discovered podcasting, and I actually fell in love with a couple of podcasts, yours included, where I learned a lot about property investment tips and tricks and concepts and all of these things that essentially by the time I was ready to buy, I felt relatively confident in my ability, my understanding to also a lot of what different podcasts speak about is building a team of professionals around you to help you execute, your strategy. So I interviewed myself. I call it an interview, but I met with four different mortgage brokers and really wanted to align with someone who was thinking more so with me about what was going to be the next step after this one and not just looking to get me a loan for this particular property and then never see me again. So I eventually found one in Newcastle. And again, back to the podcast, I heard a lot about using buyer's agents. And I did use a buyer's agent because being an accountant, I was all into the numbers and I do understand, the difference in the data essentially behind a lot of property investment decisions. So I felt like being a Newcastle or a Novocastrian myself, I didn't feel like I was going to get the most value out of my money if I bought something in Newcastle. And I was ready to essentially pay someone to help me buy somewhere else. And I eventually decided on Brisbane. So I purchased my property. I still haven't seen it to this day, but I purchased it in Brisbane with the help of a buyer's agent who took me right through from educating me on the market all the way through to executing, picking up the keys, and they actually gave them to my property manager. So it was a pretty seamless journey.
I love that you said you actually haven't seen it to this day, because to me, and John, you can feel free to chime in, but to me, that's the sign of a great property investor in that you have no emotional attachment to it. I'm not saying that you shouldn't inspect your investment property, but I'm just saying the fact that you actually haven't cited it and you trusted in the process to know that that was where the numbers stacked up, I think that says a lot. What are your thoughts, John?
Yeah, I love it. I've still got two properties that I haven't seen or been in, and I've had them for over 10 years. So yeah, I think that's great, Matt. Just interested to know why you excluded Newcastle as an investment choice.
Well, I mean, I didn't do much to rebut the thoughts around investing in other in capital cities, and or also more so Brisbane. I think Adelaide at the time was an option. So I personally thought that Newcastle, it seems to be a little bit of an extension of Sydney, and we see a little bit of a ripple effect in property prices. So when Sydney grows over time, you'll see that value kind of flow into Newcastle. And at the time when I was ready to buy in July or June last year, I felt that that we'd seen quite a lot of growth in Newcastle and coming off the back of Sydney over the last, say, 6 to 8 years. So I thought that, if I was looking to buy something that I could then, the hope is that it grows in value, we then can extract some equity and buy another property. I felt like the prospects of a property in Newcastle being able to fit that brief probably wasn't, they weren't there essentially when I compared Newcastle to Brisbane.
Yeah, cool. Okay. Excellent response. So fast forwarding to life now, you are in your notes when you reached out to us, you mentioned retiring by age 50. I'm interested to see how you come about that age and why you want to retire at that age.
I think this will come back to I guess my interest in knowing what is outside a 9-to-5 work week, because at the moment, you have, it seems like 95% of the world works 9-to-5 from Monday to Friday, but there just has to be something outside that for me. And I like the idea of being able to do things on my terms and make decisions for myself instead of because, someone is asking me to do it. So the reason I want to be able to build a foundation or a portfolio that can support me until 50 is just so that I can essentially have a decision that at the age of 50, if I want to continue working, I will. But if I don't, then we have the option, my partner and I, to essentially live life on our terms from that day forward.
Cool. Love it. Yeah. So in search for that goal in 25 years' time, What's your next step from here?
So the next step is the PPR, or principal place of residence where we want to live. So we are looking at the moment in Newcastle to buy a property for ourselves for probably the next 10 years or so. But in the meantime, or after that, we'd really like to delve into purchasing more property. Again, it doesn't have to be in Newcastle. We're pretty confident to buy where the market suggests our money would be well placed, to essentially continue to build a portfolio that by the time we're 50, it's all the debt is paid off, or enough of the debt is paid off so that it's paying us a passive income.
Yeah, awesome. So do you see, because a lot of people talk about number of assets versus value of assets, do you see it as an accumulation process where you might have 5, 6, 7 properties and you might own one or two of them outright? Or do you see it as, no, I'm going to get 2 or 3 properties and own them outright by the time I'm 50?
At this point in time, you might get a different answer out of my partner, but I'm quite comfortable with debt. I understand how debt works and how it can kind of service a portfolio in property. So personally, like, I think that I'd be comfortable to, you know, if we were to get to that point when we're 50 or when we're ready to decide to retire, to actually continue to carry some debt on that property portfolio. You know, it's very far away now, so we haven't really thought about proper numbers. But I mean, at the moment, I think I'd be comfortable to hold, say, 40 to 50% debt on a portfolio, as long as the debt's being used in the right way and it's actually helping us achieve, say, a stronger cash flow or a stronger passive income for our retirement.
Sure.
So for listeners who are, you know, maybe in a similar position to what you were when you started your property investment journey, or maybe they've, like you, they've got one under their belt and they're looking for their next place to call home. Out of all that you experienced so far in this amount of time in your journey, what would you say is the number one thing that you underestimated the most?
Probably the diligence, the amount of diligence that I needed to put in to make sure it all came together. And what I mean by that is it took me a hell of a long time to save the amount of money that I needed. So that was probably something that, and still to this day, like, I feel like I want things to speed up much more, and I want to, you know, I've purchased the first property and now I want to purchase the second and continue. But I know that it's a long, slow process. But it has only come together this far for me because I've been consistent and confident that, you know, the plan that I set for myself, as long as I stick to it and I kind of am in it for the long run, it'll all work out in the end.
Awesome. That's some really good insights. I think as millennials, generally speaking, we're very much about that instant gratification of, you know, the next thing. And it is hard. I know even myself and people I speak to, it is hard to have a long-term vision and stick with a plan that is over time. So I think that's really good advice. And certainly on the due diligence piece as well, never underestimate that, because it's a large part of getting it right and doing it the right way so that you're set up in a way that your risk is minimal as it can be.
Mm. And I think it speaks to a lot of listeners out there that might be on 35, 30 grand, 40 grand that don't give up hope of owning a property. That you're living proof that it's happened in a 3-4 year time frame. Yes, there's been sacrifices. Yes, there's been discipline. But the fact is, it's possible. So just because you're on a low income out there, it doesn't mean that you, A, can't get a loan, B, save money, and C, purchase the assets that you want to grow your wealth. We're just going to close off now, Matt. For the listeners, if you had one tip, what would it be?
It would be to put a plan in place and reverse engineer it. So for me, I knew that I wanted to save $50,000. So I said, okay, well, how do I go about it? What have I got to do today, tomorrow and the next day to make sure that I'll achieve that goal, you know, whenever it may be in the future? So for me, it was, you know, it turned into a 4-year plan, but if I didn't work it out and work out how much I needed to put away each day and or each week and what that would turn into in, you know, 3 to 4 years, I probably wouldn't have started. I really wouldn't have. I would have spent that extra money, you know, down the pub on a weekend or something like that. So the one tip that I could give to anyone and also myself for my future would be to make sure you've got a really solid plan. And then the second part would be to try and automate what your plan is so that you don't have to think, make decisions about whether you're going to stick to the plan or not. So for me, that was just doing automatic bank transfers, and you know, the pay came in and it went straight to my savings and I never had to think about it.
Yeah, that's awesome. Do you think just off the cuff you could have got there quicker? Do you think you could have done it in 2.5 years if you changed a few things, like a higher LVR or more savings or longer hours at work? Like, I'm always trying to push the edges here, so I just want to see, could you have got it done in a quicker time frame?
Well, that's a really good question, and I probably could have, but as it is, I think I sacrificed a fair bit.
Yep.
And I actually did a few things to try and speed it up, and that was that I actually I was working as a bartender, and I strategically did that because I knew that as a bartender, you get paid more after 7 o'clock at night, and you get paid more on a Saturday, and you get paid more on a Sunday. So, and also around those, when you are working, you're not spending on the other side of the bar. So,
and you get a few free drinks.
That was a very strategic thing I did, because it made me effectively not have the ability to spend, and also working, you know, making my time work for me. As well. And so what I actually did is I put NAs in, or not availability, from Monday to Thursday, and said I could work over the weekend.
Oh, nice.
Hot tip for anyone listening out there who wants to maximize their time and their hourly rate. That's a good one. I love it.
Yeah, get on the other side of the bar.
Definitely. Most definitely. Matt, it's been an absolute pleasure to understand your story, and I'm sure it's very relatable to many of our listeners. For our listeners, just a reminder as well about topics that you'd like covered in this podcast, always feel free to tag John and myself on the My Millennial Money Facebook page, because we both check it. Probably I check a little more frequently than John. John's got plenty of things keeping him busy, but please put topics in there that you'd like us to cover off. But for today, Matt, it's been awesome to understand your story and what's possible by the age of 25, and we look forward to seeing what the future holds for you, and really appreciate you spending the time with us today.
Thanks, Emily. Thanks, John. It's great to be here.
Thanks, Matt. Been a pleasure.
Have a great week, guys. We will speak to you very soon.
Bye.
We acknowledge the Darkin Young people, traditional custodians of the land on which our studio sits, and pay respect to their elders, past and present. We extend that respect to Aboriginal and Torres Strait Islander peoples who may listen to our podcast. Special thanks to Wellman Finance, our podcast partner. Sean Wellman and his team are available to coach you through your property journey, even if it's your first time. With expertise in investment and home loans, they're in your corner providing education and support as you take each step. For more info, check out wellmanfinance.com.au/M3.
If you want to really turn up your property, education and information journey, make sure you check out the Solvair Property and Finance Academy. This is an amazing online resource that John has put together. It's to empower and to give results to people who are either first-time buyers, whether for their home to live in or an investment property, or if you're a seasoned property investor. This online academy is for you. Check out the link in the show notes. It will change your life if you let it.
This podcast is for education and entertainment purposes. Any advice is general financial advice only, which does not take into account your objectives, financial situation, or needs. Because of that, you should consider if the advice is appropriate to you and your needs before acting on the information. If you do choose to buy a financial product, read the product disclosure statement and obtain appropriate financial advice tailored to your needs. Symo Interactive Proprietary Limited, the publisher of the podcast, is an authorised representative of Money Sherpa Proprietary Limited, which holds financial services license 451289.